Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, baby. Yeah, this is the Big Bopper speaking. Oh, you sweet thing.
Do I want? Will I want? Oh, baby, you know what I like.
Chantilly lace and a pretty face and a ponytail hanging down, wiggling a walk and a giggling a talk. Make the world go round. Ain't nothing in the world like a big-eyed girl to make me act so funny, make me spend my money, make me feel real loose like a long-necked goose, like a girl.
Oh, baby, that's the one I like.
What's that, baby? But, oh, honey. But, oh, baby, you know what I like.
Chantilly lace and a pretty face and a ponytail hanging down, a wiggle in the walk and a giggle in the talk. Lord, make the world go round, round, round. There ain't nothing in the world like a big eye.
Hello.
Hello, babe.
I've got some competition. The Big Bopper does not want to quit. Chantilly Lace is what we were listening to, and I thought we could all start the show with something very uplifting, and I would like to tell everyone, welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. We are going to have a couple of really good upcoming shows. A Thursday, we actually have a really good comic. Her name is Mary Ann from Brooklyn. And Mary Ann has been part of the Howard Stern Show for many years. And she has she's the one that calls in with the real funny voice. So I just can't wait for Mary Ann to come on. And then on Friday, we're going to have Stefan Mahlars, who is a classical composer from Belgium. And Stefan was on our show about a year ago, and he wrote the Judy Joy Jones Show theme, and he has a new CD coming out, and he's going to introduce that on our show. I am just excited tonight. We have a very brilliant woman, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and she is going to talk to us about many things. Dr. Albrecht is receiving her PhD right now from Harvard University. I've heard her many, many, many times on Coast to Coast with George Norrie. In fact, that's how we met. I was listening to George Norrie on Coast to Coast the other night, and I heard her talking about a new search engine that doesn't keep data on you. Evidently, the other search engines collect data on us. We're not even aware of it. And she was talking about this new search engine that does not do that. And so I wrote her and I asked her, I'm sorry, I said, I don't remember the name of it, what it is. And she wrote me back. And so then I talked to her manager and asked her to be on the show. First let me say this. As you walk down the street, a tiny microchip implanted in your tennis shoes tracks your every move. Chips woven into your clothing transmit the value of your outfit to nearby retailers. And a thief scans the chips hidden inside your money to decide if you're worth robbing. Folks, this is not science fiction. In a few short years, it could be a fact of life. RFID, real ID, human microchip implants, government surveillance, animal and food tracking, and retail data collection are just a few of Dr. Albrecht's areas of expertise. I want you to know that if you have any questions tonight, please do call in. The number is 646-929-1344. And again, that's 646-929-1344. 646-929-1344. I'm going to bring Catherine up right now, and I just want everyone to know that we're really honored to have her. She's a brilliant woman, and she is going to help us learn once more that we have choices coming up, and the more we know, the better choice we're going to make. So, hello, Catherine. Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing terrific.
So happy to have you. Thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Glad to do it. I really am honored. Well, there are so many things going on right now, I think, in the arena of privacy and so many ways that people need to be informed. And it's really a topic, I think, that has a lot of people concerned, but very few people really feel like they've got the information that they need to protect themselves. So hopefully in this hour we can set people straight and give them enough data at least to know what the threats are and what some of the easier ways are that they can take control of some of their own privacy.
I have to ask you, what is it, Catherine, that started you on this path?
Well, back in 1999, I was a graduate student at Harvard, and I found myself becoming annoyed at the fact that every supermarket that I went into was asking me for a frequent shopper card, a loyalty card, a reward card, a club card, some kind of card or other. Mm-hmm. And I was noticing as these programs were getting rolled out at more and more supermarkets and retail locations, and I said, something's not right about this. I don't like the idea of having to present a numbered plastic card in order to buy food. There's something didn't smell right about that. Mm-hmm. So I did some research, and what I discovered was that there was a whole infrastructure being set up at the cash registers, not only across America but across the globe, of essentially recording people's identity and linking that in with their purchases. Now, that was a very new concept in the 1990s. Since that time, billions of dollars spent. So a huge quantity of money has been spent to rig the world's cash registers with this capability. And cash registers since the 1990s are no longer just cash drawers with calculators attached to them. They've now become high-speed, ubiquitously networked computer terminals mm-hmm. that transmit information about us and our purchases to enormous databases at the speed of data transmission. So these things are just flying through the internet, transmitting through satellite, through all sorts of different means into these enormous databases that in some cases are so huge they're being held in underground warehouses that are even, you know, steel reinforced bunkers. that's the value that this information has to these retailers. So back in 1999, when I first began to discover this, I made a decision that I was not going to participate in any of those supermarket frequent shopper card programs. I did some research and discovered that they were not providing any discounts. That in fact, what the stores were doing, we caught them doing this over and over. They would raise the price of the grocery items and then reduce them back down to normal with this card. So essentially, rather than being a discount card, it was a surcharge for people who didn't allow their data to be collected by participating in the program. So that annoyed me. I put up a website at nocards.org. One of the key features of that website was we listed the supermarket card status of virtually every supermarket in the country. We looked into their ownership. We looked into whether they were owned by an overseas corporation. We looked at the consolidation of all of these retail stores. Mm. And I founded a group at that time called Caspian, which stands for Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. And overnight, once I put up this website, I was amazed at how many people felt the same way, wrote in, wanted to join, wanted to volunteer, wanted to get involved. And the next thing I knew, I was doing media interviews. I was testifying, giving testimony on this topic. And before I blinked twice, I had become a consumer privacy advocate. And at that time, I actually switched my major. It took took a couple years before I did it, but I actually switched my dissertation topic at Harvard away from the research that I had been doing and completely refocused it around the issue of consumer privacy. And I guess eventually I became the world's leading expert on the privacy implications of supermarket frequent shopper cards and other loyalty programs. And then in 2002, I stumbled across this information on radio frequency identification, tiny tracking devices that can be placed in clothing or identity documents, and kind of got on the same kind of a kick, dove into that research with both feet, and became kind of the go-to planetary expert on that topic and its privacy implications as well. And then it didn't seem enough to just learn about it, but I got out there and began protesting, testifying, lobbying, doing all sorts of, I guess what you would call activism to try to put the brakes on this technology. And now here we are 10 years later, and I'm still doing it.
Now, I actually found on your website that some, I think it was Gillette Razor Company, had a video camera. Is that right?
Yeah, we've had a couple of pretty high-profile scandals regarding RFID. A couple years ago, back before the public was aware of this technology, I began crashing some of the meetings. When I first discovered, let me give you the background of how I figured out that this technology had been developed.
Yeah.
I was doing research for an article on the supermarket cards. And I ran across a quote in my search by a man named John Sturmer, who's a vice president for the A.C. Nielsen Market Research Company. And he said, and I'll just paraphrase here, but he said, first there was the barcode, which did a really good job of telling us what was being sold. Then along came the frequent shopper card, which did a really good job of telling us who was buying the things that were being sold. But there's still a gap in our knowledge, and that gap is knowing when, where, and how people use the products that they buy. But there's a new technology on the horizon called RFID that promises to fill us in on those details. And as I read this, Judy, I got to say that the hair stood up on the back of my neck. I said, you got to be kidding me. These market researchers want to know when, where, and how we use the stuff we buy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we use the things we buy in our kitchens and our bathrooms and the privacy of our own homes and our offices. I don't want marketers watching me use products.
No.
And so I did a little research. I looked into this thing he was talking about. What I discovered was that just down the street from Harvard at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, that their engineers had teamed up with Procter & Gamble and Gillette and the Department of Defense to put together a research consortium to find a way to make radios, tiny, tiny radio devices, small enough, cheap enough, and efficient enough to be placed on every manufactured object on planet Earth so that everything would be trackable all the time. And when I say everything, they were talking, and this is in their own words, they said everything from sewing needles to jumbo jets would be equipped with one of these radio tracking devices and could be located in real time anywhere on the globe, and the actions of the people who own them or carry them or use them could also be inferred from these this information. And so I crashed a few of their meetings. I'll never forget the first meeting I attended. There was an executive there who said, won't it be great when we know every time the consumer takes the lid off the toothpaste in their own bathroom?
I read that on your site. I couldn't even believe it.
I just sent chills down my spine that these people, and believe me, they've come up with ways to do it, to monitor the food in your refrigerator, to monitor what you place on your countertop, to monitor how many dishes you take out of the cupboard. I mean, it's unbelievable when you look at the level of detail that these people want and have about us. And from there, I started crashing several of their meetings and kind of infiltrating their organization to figure out exactly what it was that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And at one of the meetings, this was in the fall of 2002, they had attracted funding from over 100 of the world's most powerful and wealthy corporations. So by that point, they had Walmart on board. They had, of course, Procter & Gamble and Gillette were there from the onset. They had Kraft, Nestle, International Paper, Kimberly-Clark, Unilever, Home Depot, Kodak, Coca-Cola. I mean, you name it. If it's a big company that you've heard of, they were probably part of this. And each of these companies had given around $500,000 to be part of this industry consortium that helped develop this technology. Now, at this big meeting in the fall of 2002, I'm in this big room with probably 400 or 500 key senior top-level executives from around the world. And they'd all gathered in this secure location to unveil their latest news about this technology. Well, a couple of things happened that evening or that afternoon. One of them, a guy named Dick Cantwell, who was the vice president for Gillette, got up there and he said, I've got an announcement to make. He was part of the Auto ID Center as well. He said, we've perfected the technology and we're ready to start rolling it out. And Gillette has put in a purchase order for a half a billion of these tags, 500 million RFID tags, and we're going to begin releasing them into the world in our products. So, you know, the whole room gasps, whoa, you know, it's out of the laboratory, it's into the real world. Well, the next announcement they made was even more chilling. They said, we've outgrown, we're graduating from this laboratory here at MIT within academia with these researchers, and we're ready to take this thing and run with it in the real world. So we're going to graduate out to hand off all of this information and all of the technology and all of our processes to something called EPC Global. And what that was, or what that is, it's out there now, you can find them online at epcglobal.org, is it is the barcode people. They're run by the UCC, the Uniform Code Council, which are the people who manage the barcode in the United States, and EAN, which manages it internationally. So this is, they took this technology that they hoped would replace the barcode and literally moved it out of the laboratory into the hands of the barcode people who promised to do everything in their power to get this to replace the barcode. So now you've got a technology that was being deployed in the real world, that was going to the people who had the power to put it on every physical object manufactured on the planet. And when you take a look at the capability of this technology, it's absolutely jaw-dropping. What you can do with an RFID tag, let me first describe what it is.
Yep.
The RF part stands for radio frequency, and the ID part is ID, like identification. And an RFID tag is a tiny microchip, in some cases as small as a speck of dust, hooked up to a miniature antenna. And don't picture an antenna that kind of sticks up and down like a radio antenna, but picture it like a flat, almost like a little racetrack or a maze running around the edge of a sticker.
Okay.
And with the microchip in the middle. So you've got your antenna, which is a little strip of metal running around and around. You've got your microchip in the middle, and if you take that, let's say it is on a sticker, and you stick it onto something, then anytime that sticker comes within range of an RFID reader, the reader, which can be as small as a paperback book, it can be placed behind walls or in doorways or under floor tiles or in ceiling tiles or in furniture, you can put them anywhere. One of these readers, if it comes in contact with an RFID tag, the reader sends out bursts of electromagnetic energy, what we would call a radio wave. And when that radio wave hits the little tag, the little sticker with its microchip antenna combo, it wakes it up, powers it, stimulates that little microchip to release its data into the air, and then it captures that data. So now let's say you've got one in your shoe, or let's say, and there is a company right now, Checkpoint Systems, Inc., that manufactures RFID tags designed specifically to be hidden in the soles of shoes, pressed right between the layers of the material of the shoe, so you'd never know it was there. They boast that they're invisible, that no one would ever find them.
And so they know. They're invisible.
Yeah, exactly. And if they have that in your shoe and you step on a reader hidden in the floor, or you walk through a doorway, then information gets transmitted, and that information would be linked up with you in a database, and bingo, now they've just tracked your whereabouts. So there are a number of privacy issues associated with this. You've got the issue of tracking. You've also got the issue of people being able to monitor your belongings. The other thing about RFID is that because it uses radio waves, it transmits through purses and pockets and backpacks and suitcases. So it means that if I place items in my purse and close it up and I walk through a doorway equipped with one of these readers, the doorway can see inside of my purse by identifying and querying each of those individual items RFID tag, which would then send back its info. So it gives strangers a form of X-ray vision or a way to sort of do an electronic frisk on you everywhere you go. And because each of these tags contains a unique ID number, sort of like a serial number or a social security number for things, it means that those items would have their own database entry, and those database entries would be linked up with you. So it really is the long-term vision of these folks is that every physical object on Earth would be mapped to a person who owned it, and any time it was seen, that would be recorded somewhere so that you and everything you own would be monitored 24/7 everywhere you go.
Well, it would be like having a camera. I mean, basically, we're going to have a camera in our house watching every move we make.
Well, there's not a visual part to it, but there's certainly a database recording piece to it, and we do know of a number of circumstances where these things have been linked up with cameras specifically. Mm-hmm. There's an amusement park in England called Alton Towers, A-L-T-O-N, and at the Alton Towers theme park, it's optional, but you can get a wristband to put on your wrist when you walk into the park that has an RFID tag right in it. In fact, there's a number of parks in the U.S. where they require you to have this to even go into the theme park. And this RFID tag in your wristband, as you walk around and you go on the rides and you have a hot dog and you go to the ladies' room, whatever you're doing, this wristband is communicating with hidden cameras that are located around the park that have RFID readers associated with them. And as you walk by, you trigger the camera to turn on and shoot a few seconds of video footage of you. And at the end of the day, when you go to leave the park, there's a lady sitting there at a table, and she's got a video screen behind her. And as you approach the reader device hidden in her table, it also reads the tag in your wristband. And then all of the video footage that they've captured from all the cameras around the park begins playing behind her head with you eating a hot dog and you going down the water slide and you walking through the park with your arm in arm with your husband. And all these video things begin playing behind her, and then she says, "Would you like to buy a souvenir of your day here in the park?" You can have all of this footage pressed on a DVD for just £20 British sterling.
Not even asking you beforehand if you'd like to have that done.
Well, and that's the thing. There's a quote from one of the executives at Alton Towers who says, "Don't worry, it's not going to be intrusive because the cameras will be hidden so people won't feel like they're being tracked."
Thank you.
Yeah,
you know,
if you can do that at an amusement park, you can do that on a public street, you can do that in a private home, you can do that really any place that people congregate, and that is one of the fears, that this technology could be linked up with cameras. And what makes that different from just your random surveillance camera is that because your wristband identified your presence in front of the camera, they can hone in and capture video specific just to you, and so you get your own sort of video dossier created as you walk around in public.
It's just so eerie. I got to thinking after reading so much on your website. Catherine, actually, you have your own radio show. What is your website?
I've got a couple of websites, but the radio show website is KatherineAlbrecht.com. Plain and simple, it's Catherine with a K, Albrecht, so it's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. And Albrecht is spelled A-L-B-R-E-C-H-T. So KatherineAlbrecht.com. And on that website, I have a link to where people can listen live to the show. I'm on Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time, or I guess that would be 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific time. You can catch the show live and streaming from the GCN Live website. I'm up on the Genesis Communications Network, and my show comes on right after Alex Jones. So a lot of his listeners are familiar with my show. So that's where you can catch that show. And then I've also got two other websites. Actually, we have a lot of websites, but two other main websites. One of them is spychips.com, and that is the website of the book that my co-author Liz McIntyre and I wrote on this topic. We actually reviewed 30,000 documents and put together the picture in their own words of the world that big corporations like IBM and Procter and Gamble and Singular Wireless and all these companies envision creating with RFID technology, and it's absolutely chilling. The book won, it's an award-winning book. It was a top 10 Amazon.com bestseller and has really been extremely well received by the critics, and it's probably the definitive expose on RFID, if not the only one out there.
Now, so have you had some problems with, like, corporations, Catherine, not wanting, or has anyone contacted you and said, hey, you know, you're stepping on our feet, or any of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been a thorn in the side of this industry since that meeting that I told you about. In fact, let me finish up that meeting. So I'm there, and they're saying that they're putting in a purchase order for 500,000 of these for Gillette. They mention, or they discuss, that they're going to hand off the technology to the barcode folks. And then there was one other really pivotal moment at this event. Now, this is a meeting. Bear in mind, I'm sitting there crashing this meeting. I'm in the back of the room, and there's 500 executives that have flown in from all over the world for this big groundbreaking event. Now, all this is happening behind closed doors. The public has no idea this is going on. After all of these announcements, you know, the whole room's all excited. Oh, it's really going to happen. It's really going to happen. And then they had a woman named Helen Deuce, who was their UK director of research or some such. Anyway, she gets up there, and she says, one of the things that's come up many times about this technology are the privacy issues. And I know a lot of people are concerned that the public is not going to like this technology. She says, so what we did was we traveled all around the world and we interviewed people on, you know, in Japan and France and England and all these different places. And we described the technology. We told them about all of the benefits of the technology. And we asked them what they thought. And she said, and in response, I have some good news and some bad news. First, let me give you the bad news. She said, overall, people hate this technology. 78% of the people that they surveyed said that they did not want this technology in their stuff.
No.
And I doubt, Judy, that you could get 78% of people to agree on anything at all under the globe, under the sun. And yet 78% of people around the globe said they don't want RFID. They didn't trust the corporations. They didn't trust government to use it responsibly. The word Big Brother came up repeatedly. There was huge concerns that this would be used to spy on people and track people and invade their privacy. And indeed, those people were absolutely right, because everything they feared has been detailed as a plan by a major corporation since that time. So she said, there's the bad news. People hate it. They hate it. They hate it. All right. Then she says, but now let me give you the good news. She said, on the whole, as we interviewed people about their feelings of hating the technology, and we asked, well, you know, what are you going to do about that? They felt hopeless, helpless, and apathetic to do anything about it. So she says, even though people don't like it, I don't think they're going to really pose a problem to the implementation of this technology. I think we can move forward. She said, unless, of course, the only thing that might change that would be if some consumer advocate came along and stirred up the public against the technology and motivated them to fight back. And at that moment, I'm sitting in the back of the room with my little clipboard and my little handheld recorder, and I at that moment said, you got it. Bring it on. I will be that person. And that is exactly what I've done now for the last 7 years. I have been the thorn in the side of this industry, dogging them with boycotts, with protests in the streets, with testimony before legislatures. I have flown all over the world. I've testified before the European Union. The governor of my home state of New Hampshire appointed me as an expert to serve on the RFID study committee here. I've been invited to speak before the Royal Society of London. I've been on CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox News, you name it. And I have done everything in my power to alert the public to this enormous menace that is coming our way in the form of a total and complete surveillance world that these people want to create, not just on the streets, not just in stores, but in our own bathrooms and kitchens. These people want to watch us 24/7, and they want to know everywhere we go, everything we do, everything we buy, everything we own. And unless somebody sounds an alarm, these people are actually going to get away with it.
And you're the alarm, and I have asked people, what do you feel if the razor you buy is videotaped? And they say, well, if they really want to see my legs, that bad, you know, it's that apathy. And so I think, Yeah, well, that's one way to look at it, but, you know, you do have a choice. To me, that's why I felt like it was so important to have you on the show, Catherine, to let people know that there are choices, there are ways, because I know I heard you say, I think on some show, that you don't use charge cards, which I couldn't imagine. How do you live without them? But, I mean, it gives you a form of privacy because nobody knows really that much about what you're spending and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I've become so intimately familiar and aware with the sorts of databases being collected on people in this country and with the potential for abuse and just voyeurism and just nobody's business. And because of that and because of my religious beliefs, my political beliefs, my understanding of history, a whole variety of philosophical issues that figure into my worldview, I have made a decision that to the extent I can, I'm going to avoid participating in becoming a partner to my own privacy invasion. So I'm not, you know, to the extent these people want to invade my privacy, I'm going to try to prevent that wherever I can. And one of the key ways that they do that is through these frequent shopper cards at the supermarket, through, you know, telephone surveys, through, you know, all of the various ways and methods that they use. And one of the things that I consider to be absolutely private information that's nobody's business is where I spend my money, how I spend my money, where I get my money, what I do with my money, where I go, who I go there with. I mean, none of these things are anybody's business. And so I really make a point of not sharing that. So I make all of my purchases in cash. I do all of my transactions in cash. And for the most part, I stay low under the radar. I mean, I don't give out my Social Security number to anybody other than the federal government, specifically for purposes of administering that program. I don't give out my date of birth. I don't give out my home phone number. I don't give out my home address. I mean, there's certain things that I think anybody, if they want to start really thinking through the issues of privacy and all of the ways that their privacy can be invaded and their lives ruined, essentially, from people knowing all that about them, you know, these are things that people really should start paying more attention to. And you mentioned when you were introducing me on the program, the IXQuick program, which is the alternative to Google. One of the latest kicks that I'm on is realizing, or ever since I've realized, that Google and Yahoo and MSN and all the other search engines are recording all of our searches. They have, if you use Gmail or Google Maps or have a Google Calendar account or any Google service that you may use or sign on to, then Google knows your identity. It knows your IP address, which may or may not be, it may be static or dynamic, but if it's a constant number, they know that. They know who you are when you log in, and all of your searches that you make get linked up with you. So because of that, you know, I'm so worried about the databases being kept in the supermarket, which can be abused in a whole host of ways. They can be given to your HMO. They can be used to deny you coverage or health care or cancel your policy if they don't like the way you're eating. They've literally turned those records into nutritional health profiles where they can predict, based on what you eat, what diseases you're likely to get or what diseases you may have. So all of that stuff is problematic, but it's nothing compared to what Google knows about us. Google knows if you're unemployed. Google knows if you have a cat. Google knows if you have a runny nose. They know the last rash you had. They know the last prescription medicine you were prescribed. And they know all of this because we all unthinkingly log on to Google and type in all of our personal information. They even know what restaurant you ate at last week because you were probably, and not you, Judy, but generally, you know, you were probably too lazy, like me, to look up the address in the phone book. You just logged on to Google and punched it in, and you wanted to know the hours and the phone number. So they even know. You know, they know everything. They know the name of your doctor because you probably didn't look his number up in the Yellow Pages either.
No, and are they selling this information? I mean, what are they getting from it? They've got to be getting quite a bit.
Well, that's an interesting question because Google uses it in a whole variety of ways and for marketing purposes. And they've got this whole system now where they're going to track you not only on Google pages but on other pages that serve up Google AdWords and other pages that have relationships with Google, so they can track you as you surf the net as well. So now not only do they know what sorts of things you search for, but they know what sorts of websites you go to, how long you spend on particular pages. It's really scary. And when you look at the long-term plans that Google has and the amount of information that they've amassed, Google is now being linked up with HMOs to have all of your medical information stored in Google Health Records. There is talk about this huge multi-billion dollar allotment of money as part of the stimulus and bailout package towards these electronic medical records that Google may well be the company managing all of your prescription data, your health information, your mental health status, your last visit with your doctor, which rash you had, which medicine you're taking. Google will have all of that. Google has a picture of the front door of your house if they've been doing that Google Street View in your neighborhood.
Yep.
They have a satellite picture of your backyard from Google Earth.
Yep.
They have, it blows
it's
the mind.
It's incredible.
When you think about in this world today, knowledge is power.
Yep.
Then if knowledge is power, then the most powerful corporation on planet Earth right now is Google. They just rented out 1 million square feet of office space from NASA, within NASA. So they're partnering up with NASA. When you talk to their founders, they actually talk about wanting to become ultimately an artificial intelligence that knows more about you than you know about yourself. So if you put all that together, you realize Google has an enormous data dossier on virtually every person on the globe who uses the Internet, who's ever logged on to Google. And what woke me up to this, because I had been unthinkingly using Google just like everybody else,
it's useful
and it's helpful and it returns
good
results and blah, blah, blah. But back in November of last year, the final straw for me, because I kind of knew, I kind of felt uneasy, but I just kept doing it anyway and just kind of whistling through the graveyard and pretending like everything was going to be okay. And my own radio listeners would call me on it. They would say, Catherine, you're this privacy advocate, and yet you're telling us to look stuff up on Google. Don't you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, yeah, I know. So finally what pushed me over the edge was the Google flu map. And this came up recently, too, with the whole swine flu thing that Google was serving up those maps. But back in November, before anybody even knew that Google was doing this, Google revealed that whenever somebody logged on, this was for a certain period of time, whenever somebody would log on to Google and type in a search query related to the flu, like thermometer, fever, temperature, chest congestion, flu symptoms, whatever, that they would, at that moment, when they would flag those searches, and they would then trace back that person's IP address to identify their geographic location.
Oh.
Now, they wouldn't necessarily know your home or your street number or whatever, but they would know your region and your IP address, which may or may not be linked up with you. And, of course, Google, because of all of its other services, probably knows your identity anyway if you're using Google, Gmail or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they would pinpoint your geographic location and then put a red dot on a map. And after a while, when enough people would type in these search terms and they'd put the little dots on the map, then they would have a pretty good sense of where there were flu outbreaks occurring at that point in time. And then they took that map and they shared it with the Centers for Disease Control. Mm-hmm. And they were boasting that Google knows more about Americans' health than the Centers for Disease Control and indeed all of the HMOs and doctors in the country combined. And they were probably right. So when I looked at that and I said, now wait a minute, if Google can put a flag on a search for chest congestion or flu symptoms, then they could put a flag on anything else they wanted to and do the same thing. They could put a flag on searches for Second Amendment rights or a flag on searches for RFID concerns or veterans issues or pro-life issues or pro-choice issues. Name your political issue. Name your hot button. Google could, it has the technology to do it, it could put a flag on that and trace those searches right to your front door. And
that's right.
That's exactly what blew my mind. And I said, now let me think now. Now that Google has me scared, Mm-hmm. Let me think of what they know about me. And that's mm-hmm. when I sat down and I made that mental list. And I said, you know what they know about me? Everything.
Everything.
Everything. They know when I'm looking for a new car.
Yep.
They know when I'm looking for a new...
Everything, Catherine.
You know, a new dermatologist. They know
yep.
which one I picked. They,
yep.
they know everything.
They know everything. And they actually, they were the easiest search engine. I mean, they were user-friendly. We all wanted Google instead of other search engines because they were so friendly, so easy.
Well, and
I mean,
let me tell you the long-term picture of this.
Okay.
Their founders have actually said, when asked what the ultimate search engine would be, they
mm-hmm.
have said it would be like the mind of God.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, these people have, they're megalomaniacs. They have immense visions of where they're going to go in the future. They want to take every book in print and put it all on Google and essentially eliminate printed books. They want to replace your hard drive so you would no longer even have a computer. All of your files would reside on a Google server.
Okay.
And you would just have a keyboard and a monitor to log in onto this remote network that they would manage. They want to have, they're working on Google DNA, where they're DNA mapping, and ultimately they have talked about doing DNA databases on people.
Mm-hmm.
And you combine that with the electronic medical records they're doing and the records of our homes. I mean, it boggles the mind to see how immense this company has become and is becoming. And when you understand that, and then you look at their long-term goals, they want to become an artificial intelligence. They've even talked about eventually having some kind of a link to your mind. I know, it sounds wild, but, you know, if
it does.
They can pull it off, it's Google. And the reason they are so rich, see, here's the other thing I tell people. If you don't believe me, think of all the cool services Google offers.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time anybody paid for any of those services? We don't pay for them.
No.
So you know how they pay for them?
No.
We are the product. We are what they sell. They lure us in, and then they sell us to other people. Yeah.
I mean, we have to know this. I have thought often, what in the world are they getting from this?
That's
Where
right.
are they getting their money? It's us. They're selling us.
It's like Soylent Green, you know?
we
are the food. It's
We're
terrible.
The food.
So now let me tell you what I did in response to this horrible realization that Google is becoming the menace of the future.
Right.
Is I combed high and low, and this was actually in response to Coast to Coast AM, the late night radio show.
Right, right.
They called me up, and they wanted to talk about this Centers for Disease Control and data sharing
mm-hmm.
on the flu stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, now we want you to come on the show tonight, Catherine, and we want you to tell us an alternative search engine that people can use.
Mm-hmm.
So I rose to the challenge. I said, I'm ready to dump Google 100%. I will find an alternative. And
okay.
I went out there and searched all over the Internet, and I found the most awesome, awesome web page or a search engine. It's called Ixquick, but that's impossible to spell, so I'm going to give you their new name. It's Start Page.
Start Page.
Like start protecting your privacy with Start Page.
Okay.
And they're going to be introducing that new name, I believe, at the end of May, so here within the next couple of weeks. But if you go there now to startpage.com, it will redirect you to Ixquick, I-X-Q-U-I-C-K, Ix,
mm-hmm.
and then the word quick. But it, just remember startpage.com. And the cool thing about this website is that it does not record anything about you. You can go on there and search for flu symptoms and chest congestion to your heart's
mm-hmm.
content. And it will not record those searches. It will not record your IP address. It won't even look for any information on you. They keep no databases whatsoever on any of their visitors, and everything you do there is private.
Now, how do they make their money, though? I mean, I have to ask, if you know, how do they stay in business, or what?
Well, and here's where you get back to the sort of ubiquity of how the Internet is working right now, is with
okay.
this, in these tough economic times, really the only company that is making any money off of advertising is Google.
Mm-hmm.
And I about fell out of my chair when I learned this, but before you fall out of yours, let me tell you there's a catch. They actually run Google AdWords on StartPage.
Oh.
They show up at the top as sponsored results. You'll get one or two of them. Sometimes you'll get
mm-hmm.
three. They show up as sponsored results, and unlike other companies, and I actually grilled them on this when I found this out. I was like, what? I'm using you instead of Google, and you're running Google AdWords. They actually have a contractual relationship with Google where Google does not receive any information on their visitors. So unlike everybody else on the entire Internet, to my knowledge,
right.
that runs Google AdWords, see, when you go onto a page, let's say you go onto like a tennis page.
Okay.
If there's a Google ad appearing on that tennis page,
okay.
Google has received your IP address.
Mm.
Even though you're not on Google, you're on a tennis page, the tennis page will redirect your IP address to Google simply because of the presence of that ad word. And Google actually requires that by the contract with every single page that they put an ad onto, with the exception of StartPage/IxQuick. And that's because those guys negotiated a deal with Google. Listen, we'll run your ads. You can pay us for that. And that is actually what keeps them funded. But we will not give you any information on any of our users, period.
I get it. So we're still going to be okay as long as we're, you know, with them, because they're not going to give anything about who we are, what we are. They are truly for the people. They're for us to keep our privacy.
Well, and that's what I love about them. I've met with their key executives.
Oh.
I fell so in love with this company after talking about them on Coast to Coast that I had them on my radio show.
Uh-huh.
And that was when they first made the announcement. The world's first announcement was made on my radio show that they were going to zero IP address logging. Because before that, I think they held on to your IP address for like 2 days.
Okay.
And then they redid their entire server so that they literally cannot hold on to it. There's no place for them to even put it.
You know, one of the corporations that, to me, is mind-boggling is Amazon.com. You know, I wonder, because they're putting so many publishing companies and businesses out of pocket because they are taking over everything.
Well, they're like the Walmart of the
publishing
industry. The Walmart.
So
of the
what do you know
industry.
About Amazon? Do we need to kind of watch our private data with them when we buy stuff, or do you know anything about them?
Well, I do know that like all of today's businesses, I mean these big mega corporations, they are all looking to do something they call CRM. And CRM means customer relationship management.
Okay.
And I would call it consumer surveillance. There are entire companies, hundreds of companies, that exist solely to collect maximum amounts of data on customers so that they can use that data to try to manipulate and push and prod you into parting with more of your money.
Mm-hmm.
And Amazon certainly makes use of CRM practices. One of the things that Amazon got caught for, and we talked about this in our book Spy Chips, is Amazon was caught pricing the same object or the same book or the same item differently for different people.
Oh.
So if they saw that you were a person who only bought things on sale and they wanted to push a book to you and you clicked on a link, you might get a sale price. But if they saw that you were willing to pay full price, then you could click on the same book on the same day as your brother-in-law and you would get a price that was maybe 10-20% higher than he would. And they got caught doing that, and it was a pretty big public relations fiasco for them to have that discovered. And so now they've kind of backed away from those practices. But certainly they look very, very closely at your long-term spending patterns, and they do everything they can think of to try to get you to spend more money. I think more disturbingly than even those practices, though, are kind of the Walmart-like issues of Amazon, in that they are putting the small booksellers out of business.
I was just
reading an analyst report that if we're not careful, soon there's going to be nothing left but Barnes & Noble and Amazon. I mean, those are going to be the only two options.
The only two.
Books.
Can you imagine that, Catherine? I mean, how anything or any one place would want to take over the whole world? It's absurd. You know, it's like we have to have that freedom to be able to go here and there and everywhere. Even if they can take it over, I'm not sure it's going to last. I would think there would be something that would just say, that's enough, you know.
Well, the problem that you get into with Amazon, for example, is Amazon is so enormous that they can strike special deals with publishers. There are publishers who have literally set up publishing facilities, and I'm talking factories where they make the books, to be closer to the Amazon distribution center so they can save on shipping. Because Amazon is selling the majority of their books.
Yep.
So it, once you get to that point, if a publishing company is literally set up next door to Amazon so that it only
right.
has to drive a truck across town instead of get on a train and a blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
then they're able to offer those books to Amazon dirt cheap. And yet if you own, you know, Judy and Catherine's bookstore in you know, Phoenix,
yeah.
Arizona,
yeah.
then we're going to have to pay full shipping costs to get that stuff
Absolutely.
Out there, and we're not going to get those discounts that Amazon gets. And so you and I are not going to be able to offer that book for $10. We're going to have to charge the full price of $15. And unfortunately, the people with us in Phoenix or
mm-hmm.
Tampa or Des Moines or wherever it is, instead of saying, hey, I want to support local businesses, they say, I want to save $5, so I'm going to order it from
right.
Amazon. And meanwhile, you and I go out of business, and the problem down the road is once they are a monopoly and there are no other options, you watch if those prices don't go creeping way back up again.
Way back up. Catherine, would you be open to taking a question?
I'd be delighted.
All right. Hello?
Hello?
Caller?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I just have a quick question. I want to know, you had mentioned earlier about us being the general population being watched in the bathroom and in our homes. What is the purpose of being watched in the bathroom and in our homes? And
well, let me tell
settings?
You, yeah, that's a great question. I'm really glad you brought it up. The getting back to this whole issue of RFID tracking, the idea of watching people when they take the lid off the toothpaste in their own bathroom is really a marketing issue. They want to know when you run out of toothpaste so they can offer you the next tube or offer you a coupon for a different brand. So it's really about selling products. And at this point, Procter & Gamble and Gillette, which founded this whole RFID technology and the center at MIT that created it, they've now merged to become the world's biggest consumer product company. So lots of stuff in your house right now, Crest toothpaste, Tide laundry detergent, Cascade dishwashing detergent, Clairol products, CoverGirl products, Dove products, the list just goes on and on, Oil of Olay. All these products are made by this one big, huge mega conglomerate. And if you want to put them in perspective, they are to making stuff, products, what Walmart is to selling stuff. So they're the biggest, they're enormous. You can't even fathom the size of this company. And they would like to be able to monitor your use of products in your home so that they could expand their portion of your wallet even deeper. Now, the way they'd like to do this, and I'll give you two examples, and you can read all about this in our book, Spy Chips, if you want to understand how this works. So what they envision is in your kitchen, for example, Procter & Gamble, we found a document, an internal document from Procter & Gamble that went out to employees, and it was saying that in the future, if everything goes the way they want it, all of the products that you buy at the supermarket, instead of a barcode, would have one of these tracking devices on them.
Mm-hmm.
And your refrigerator would be plugged into the Internet. I know this sounds crazy, but they're working on them right now. They've got prototypes of them available now. So that every object in your refrigerator would be communicating with a reader in your refrigerator. So your fridge would have an inventory of what was in it, and it would send that out through the Internet to marketers or public health officials or whoever. And the reason you would want to do this, I mean, you're probably going, well, why would I ever agree to that?
Right.
The incentive they would give you, they'd give you two incentives. Number one, if anything on your shelf gets recalled, you'll get an immediate notice. Don't eat the tainted beef. It has mad cow. Don't eat the blah, blah, blah. It's been tainted with cyanide, whatever. So that's the one way that they'll get you on board. And then the second way is they figure we're way too lazy to make grocery lists. So as you drink the last of the orange juice and you throw it away, then the fridge will see when you take the orange juice out, and it will see when you don't put it back in, and it will see when you throw it into your RFID reader garbage can, and then you'll automatically get, oh, I don't know, a coupon in the mail, or your local supermarket will know, and it'll add it to your grocery list for when you show up. So that's their vision. Now, the creepy part, though, is what they talked about from their angle. And what they said is their example of your smart fridge is that it would know when you drank the last Coke. And then, as if by magic, on your cable television, an ad for Pepsi would appear. And they would even know if the ad worked because they would be able to tell when you restock soda into your fridge which brand you bought. And if you restocked with Pepsi and they were successful in getting you to switch, then they could actually get a specific payoff from Pepsi for doing that.
Wow. It seems like a lot of control. And I don't know if they're sending out subliminal messages through the television, you know, to get you to buy a particular brand. Let me talk about that.
This is fascinating. Let me tell you, Procter & Gamble partnered up a couple years back with something called Bright House Technologies. And they've been involved in doing research where they would take these volunteers and they would put them in MRI machines. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to find advertising signals that would act on the motivation center of the brain, in other words, cause you to react, cause you to be motivated to do something like buy their product. And they were looking for the specific ones. Now, it's easy to find things that motivate that. I mean, you just show a guy, a girl in a bikini or whatever, and you can motivate him to buy a beer. But what is difficult to do and what they were working on trying to do is finding a way to do it without triggering the person's conscious awareness. So they were literally trying to find a way to motivate you to do something, and you would not even know that it had happened.
Wow.
And they were using the most sophisticated medical technology, MRIs, to actually look at the response of people's brains to find the best way to do it. Now, that was nearly 10 years ago. So if they've been working with people in MRIs to figure out how to get them to respond and not even know why they suddenly have this compulsion to go buy Oil of Olay face cream, then you better believe that that's getting incorporated into their advertisements, no question.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. This is
absolutely
very informative, and I have to buy the book.
Thanks for the question. Yeah. And okay. if you look on spychips.com, there's an order form on there. If you dig around, you might have to look a little bit, but it's in the upper right-hand corner. There's a link. I think it's to learn about our latest book, but that will take you to an order form, and I'll send you a signed copy if you want to get it directly
from
me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
okay,
well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Great talking to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. You know, we'll take a little break, and we're going to come back on for a few minutes because I really want people to know that they have choices, and I think that's the main thing that Catherine is letting us know. Knowledge is a choice, and that's why I'm really honored to have you on, Catherine, because a lot of people don't realize they have that choice. So we'll play a little bit of a song called Let's Play.
Let's play. I'm the kind of girl, a little mystique, and you're the only one I've ever met who can't handle it. You climb my wall, break down my door. I think you might be just the kind of boy I've been waiting for.
So that was Let's Play by 13-year-old, 13, she, Amelia Bloom, and she's from Australia. She was our guest a couple of months ago, and, you know, I just wanted to say, Catherine, if there is something that you feel like, you know, maybe new that you've learned about that you'd like people out there to know about, the audience to kind of be aware of that we're not aware of.
Absolutely. I think the key thing that we have to be concerned about right now is that these technologies are moving forward, and the place that you're likely to see them right now is in your credit cards, of all things.
Oh.
And when you start looking at some biblical prophecy around these things, talking about a time, you know, of the mark of the beast when people won't be able to buy or sell without a mark or a number, there's actually an implantable version of this technology that you could inject into somebody's hand and use to make payments. It's really frightening. And
what's already
done
here.
It's already here. It's the VeriChip microchip implant. If you go to our website at antichips.com, you can learn about how they cause cancer in animals. So last thing in the world you want to inject into your own flesh. And that same technology that can be injected into your right hand as a payment device is now being placed in credit cards. So, you know, people who say, oh, I don't believe in any of that prophecy stuff,
right.
I'm telling you, you just take a look at the Bible. It's in the 13th chapter of Revelation. So I always tell people how to get to it if they want to. Pick up a Bible, go to the last book. It's called Revelation. Go to the 13th chapter. You can remember that because 13 is an unlucky number, so that'll take you right there. And then look at the last three sections of that chapter. It's 16 through 18, the last three of chapter 13. And what you'll see there, the Bible talks about a time when all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave or imprisoned, will be forced to have a mark placed in their right hand or their forehead, and that mark will be a number or a name, and the number will be 666, and you'll have to have it to buy or sell, and if you don't have it, you won't be able to. Well, we are, for the first time in human history, we now have the technological capability of making that happen. And now I'm going to bring this whole conversation full circle. All of those technologies going into place at the cash registers that first got me going on this in 1999,
right.
Those are all being geared up to accept RFID payments because of these credit cards. So we now have a system where every store on the globe, in Jamaica, in Yemen, in Japan, in Thailand, it doesn't matter where, everywhere on the globe, they have put in these frequent shopper card systems in these cash registers. And they're also putting in RFID payment systems. And once they get used to having everybody swipe in their RFID credit cards, then it's going to be a simple matter to say, well, that's not secure. Somebody could steal it. Now we need to put the RFID credit card right into your hand. The technology is already there. The wave and swipe device is already there. And instead of pulling your card out of your wallet and waving it, we just want you to press your right hand up to it. And boom, we are right there at Revelation 13. It is coming so quickly, it's making my head spin.
Now, Catherine, are people, corporations, able to do this without our knowledge? Are they able to implant us with a chip without our knowledge?
No, and that's the good news so far. The chips right now that they can implant in people, they're big. They require a pretty big injection. You would bleed. It's not something that's going to happen without your knowledge.
Okay.
And the reason they have to be big is they've got to have a big enough antenna to transmit. So you're not going to accidentally swallow one. They can't put one into you, you know, during an injection of a vaccine. They're not that little. They're big.
They're almost
as big as a Tic Tac. So, you know, you can't stick that in somebody without their noticing that.
Without their knowledge.
Notice. The other thing about them is even if they did, which I can't imagine they would, but even if they did, you only have about a 6 to 12-inch read range out of one of those implantable chips. They can't be read from a satellite. They can't even be read from across a room. They're not very useful for tracking people, the implantable version. What they are useful for is turning people into scannable, barcodable inventory units. So if I bring a scanner over to someone who's been chipped and run it over their body, I'll get a number back, just like when I scan a barcode. I get a number into the computer. And then the final thing I want to let people know is, and I'm sorry I have to jam so much into this hour here.
That's all right. Go ahead.
But there's a push right now by Janet Napolitano, our Homeland Security Secretary, under Obama, to place RFID tags in our driver's licenses. She has actually said that she wants to scrap that Real ID program, which was going to federalize all the driver's licenses, and replace it with something called enhanced driver's licenses. Now, whenever you hear that word, run screaming. Enhanced driver's license means a driver's license with an RFID tag in it that can be read through your wallet or your purse or your backpack from 30 feet away to identify and track you. And believe me, with 30 feet, they fully can track you because they can put those readers like they did at Alton Towers, that amusement park. The read range on that thing was less than 30 feet. So they could certainly use an RFID tag in your driver's license to track you. Creepily enough, already tens of thousands of people in the states of Washington and New York have signed up voluntarily to receive these enhanced driver's licenses. They have not been told what the privacy problems are. All they've been told is if you get one of these, it'll make it quick and easy for you to get across the border into Canada. And they have these special fast lanes where people who have these special driver's licenses, cough, cough, can get in these fast lanes and just zip across the border into Canada and zip back home without having to wait in the line. So that's how they do it. They just like the supermarket cards, they lure you in with the promise of low prices or the promise of some benefit, and what they don't tell you are all of the privacy downsides. So if you're in the state of Washington or New York, and soon they're going to issue these in Arizona, Michigan, and Vermont, and other border states have already signed on to participate later too. Do not take, no matter what, an enhanced driver's license. Just don't do it.
Just don't do it. And, you know, when you say no, when you realize you have that choice, as a child, my parents said no, no polio vaccine, because all of my friends were getting polio after they had the vaccine. So my parents said no. And, you know, we have that choice, but only if we know, if we have the knowledge of what's coming. And that's why I'm so appreciative of having Catherine on the show tonight. I want everyone out there to realize that we do have that choice. And, Catherine, your book, well, it is on Amazon.com.
It is. It's at Borders and Barnes & Noble. It's also available on our website at spychips.com. And if anybody wants to get a copy and they can't remember all that, they can email me. Let me give out my email address.
Sure.
It's K-M-A, K-M-A, K-M as in Mary A, at spychips.com. And the name of the book is Spy Chips, so just KMA at spychips.com. And just tell me you want to get a copy of the book, and I'll get back to you with an address where you can send a check or a money order, and I'll get a signed copy out to you right away.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been a delight. So two things, everybody. Get a copy of Spy Chips. Read it. You will become an expert in the couple of hours it takes you. The book has been called Hilarious and a Masterpiece. It's won awards. It really is, and I won't take full credit for that. My co-author, Liz McIntyre, is a brilliant and hilariously gifted writer. There's Elvis Presley and talking plants and all kinds of cool stuff in the book, so you'll enjoy it, too. It's a fun read. It's not just a boring technical tome. It's really
an entertaining
book.
It's not just technical.
Yeah, so get a copy of Spy Chips. And then the other thing I'd ask people to do is listen to my radio show.
Absolutely. Let's give out that website.
Yes, it's at KatherineAlbrecht.com. And you can listen to the archives. You can listen to live shows Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 Eastern or 1 to 3 Pacific time. And I've got 2 years' worth of archives on there, searchable, and a whole variety of topics people can look up. And then the final piece of advice I'd give you this evening is stop using Google, Yahoo, MSN, Ask.com, whatever website you're using to search. Switch over to Start Page. And the reminder there, start protecting your privacy with Start Page. It'll send you to ixquick.com, but don't worry, that's the same company. Just remember Start Page, and that'll get you going.
Because we have a right, Catherine, to our privacy. That's what we kind of have forgotten. We have a right. And that's what, when I hear you talk, I think, oh, my God, I've got a right.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, we need to empower ourselves and remember that we don't have to be, as that executive put it, we don't have to be apathetic and helpless and hopeless.
No.
We need to do exactly what they were afraid of us doing, which is stand up for our own rights and say no.
No. Well, I want you to know that you have an open invitation anytime to come back. And everyone, please go to her website, which is Catherine, KatherineAlbrecht.com. And you can see all of that on the description page of tonight's show. I hope everyone will understand that Catherine is what I feel, I'd say she's one of our leaders. She's telling us to remember that we are an individual. We have our rights, and we have our own mind, and use it. So, Catherine, thank you, and let me tell everyone that thank you, Alan Levy, who is the founder of Blog Talk Radio. I really wouldn't be here without Alan, and I love you all, and I hope you'll join us Thursday night with Marianne of Brooklyn. Marianne's been on the Howard Stern Show nonstop. She's hilarious, and we all need to have a good belly laugh. So thank you, Catherine.
Hey, thank you, Jody. It's been a real pleasure being on your show. God bless you and your listeners. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's play. I'm the kind of girl, a little mystique, and you're the only one I've ever met who can't handle it. You climb my walls, break down my door, I think you might be just the kind of boy I've been waiting for. Wild and unpredictable. I don't get why you know.
I'm especially drunk. The woman calling me every 5 minutes. Tiffany Dijon.